This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
The American people have been betrayed by bankrupt liberal institutions that did nothing to halt the rise of the corporate state, the dismantling of our manufacturing base, and the erosion of our civil liberties. The needs of the American people have been ignored by those who posit themselves as our country's moral voice. They've been abandoned as the standard bearers of liberal values stand back and allow corporations to dismantle our economy, wage unjust and unsustainable wars, and tear apart the system of law that protects the interests of working and middle-class citizens. The new book is The Death of the Liberal Class. It's a terrific honor to welcome back to this program best-selling and Pulitzer Prize-winning author, Chris Hedges. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I was telling you before we went on the air, I have not finished the book. I'm about halfway through, and it is really terrific. And I just want to thank you for this book. I've been recommending it to everybody, and I think it is very timely. And it's the kind of book I like. It's full of history, but also a lot of current affairs, and puts it all into historical context. Context for us. Let me begin with this question for you. Who is the liberal class? When we talk about the liberal class in America, who is it? Who are we talking about? What are we talking about? And why is it important?
It's the pillars of the liberal establishment are traditionally embodied in the press, public education, the universities, culture, labor, liberal religious institutions, and finally, the Democratic Party. And these institutions traditionally watched out for those Americans who were outside of the narrow power elite. It's, of course, labor unionizing and labor movements that created the middle class in this country. And sadly, we have watched an erosion of those institutions. Now, they are vital to a functioning civic democracy, because they provide a mechanism or a channel through formal systems of power by which the grievances and injustices that are visited on working men and women, the poor, or in the case of the civil rights movement, African Americans, can be redressed. They make piecemeal or incremental reform possible. And when they calcify, when they no longer function, when those at the bottom have no mechanism by which to be heard, then civil society breaks down. And anger, discontent, rage is expressed through movements that traditionally are emotionally consistent, but utterly irrational in terms of their political agenda. And those movements attack not only established structures of power, but the liberal class itself, which, while it continues to speak in the language of concern for working men and women and basic civil liberties, no longer promotes those values. And I think we're seeing that within our society. I think that the anger that is expressed by many in the Tea Party movement, which I think is a legitimate anger, I think they have been betrayed, is directed not only at government, but directed at the liberal establishment that once watched out for the working class and no longer does.
We're talking with Chris Hedges. The new book is Death of the Liberal Class. Now, Chris, we have seen cultures and societies where the liberal class has been marginalized, demonized, and has been destroyed. And what is the result? I mean, you write about Yugoslavia and Italy and Germany. We know what happens, right?
It's very dangerous, because opposition becomes expressed in ways that are not only anti-democratic, but seek to tear down the very structures that once made an open society possible. And I covered the war in the former Yugoslavia for the New York Times. I see many similarities to the breakdown of civil society in the United States and the breakdown of the civil society in the former Yugoslavia. When you go back and look at at collapsed liberalism, at a bankrupt liberalism, this opens the doors for some very frightening political configurations. It was, you know, Dostoevsky, for instance, was obsessed with this, with the ineffectualness of Russian liberal institutions at the end of the 19th century. It's what Notes from Underground is about. It's what Demons is about. The character in Notes from Underground, the underground man, was the defeated dreamer, the person who went to all the Obama rallies and chanted, "Yes, we can," and then felt betrayed, became cynical and passive. And when liberal values are no longer promoted within a society, then, in Dostoevsky's words, you enter an age of moral nihilism. It opens the door to figures like Lenin and the Bolsheviks. This was true in Weimar. It was it's what vomited up figures like Slobodan Milosevic and Franjo Tuđman and Radovan Karadžić, who, in a period of relative stability, were buffoonish figures, as often as the Nazis were. They were ridiculed. They were the kind of people that John Stewart or Colbert made fun of. But they have, however buffoonish and idiotic they are, they have, unfortunately, a capacity to mobilize hatred. Glenn Beck has this. We still live in a period of relative stability, but if we should suffer a crisis with our currency, and we're playing a very dangerous game with our currency, then all the shackles are off, and we're no more immune from these kinds of political configurations than other collapsing societies.
We're honored to be talking with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Chris Hedges. His new book is Death of the Liberal Class. Chris, I want to go back to the early 20th century in America, where we saw the liberal class making some real gains and having an impact in America. Tell us about that, and then I want to talk about what happened during World War I that just changed everything.
Well, as I mentioned before, I mean, it's the labor movement that created the middle class. We didn't have much of a middle class in the 19th century, and by the eve of World War I, we had very powerful populist progressive forces, socialist, anarcho-syndicalist forces as embodied in, like, the Wobblies, communists. And these movements, which were radical movements, along with a very progressive liberal class, as embodied with figures like Walter Rauschenbusch and the Social Gospel and Jane Addams, Hull House, and this kind of stuff, threatened the hold of the power elite. The power elite was very frightened. And as Dwight MacDonald writes, the war was the rock on which these movements were broken. And they never recovered. Because, as you mentioned, World War I, which was a very unpopular war, it was not a war that Americans supported. Indeed, Woodrow Wilson ran for re-election on the slogan, "He kept us out of the war." But the bankers, Wall Street, had lent tremendous sums to the British and the French. And they knew that if they lost the war, they would not be repaid. And the war was not going well. And so the capitalist banking class pushed Wilson quite successfully into the conflict. And they needed to create, when they first declared war, recruitment levels were dismal. Nobody wanted to go, and they almost immediately had to institute the draft. And they created the first system of modern mass propaganda. The Committee for Public Information, or known as the Creel Commission, it was headed by a former muckraking journalist named George Creel, who ended his career working for Joe McCarthy and Richard Nixon in the House Un-American Affairs Committee. And it was a brilliant system, one that was very closely studied by Goebbels, the Minister of Propaganda for the Nazis, where not only did they cross disciplinary lines, they had their own film division, which pretty much paid for itself, churning out movies like Kaiser, the Butcher of Berlin, this kind of stuff. They had speakers' bureaus. They created their own news division, which disseminated news stories that were all pro-war, of course, graphic artists. But more importantly, they employed the understanding of mass psychology that had been explored by Le Bon, Trotter, and finally Sigmund Freud, one of the figures that appeared out of the Creel Commission and went on to be the sort of the father of modern public relations, was Edward Bernays, who was Freud's nephew twice over. And as soon as the war was over, these propagandists migrated to Madison Avenue, where they began working not only for government, but for corporations. And they instituted a kind of permanent war psychology. The dreaded Hun was immediately replaced with the dreaded Red. And this allowed government, or gave the power elite, the cover by which to break these populist movements. The Wobblies were completely broken, for instance. One of our most militant and important labor unions, Big Bill Haywood, spent the last 10 years of his life in exile in the Soviet Union, the CIO. And this proved devastating for the liberal class, because the liberal class was a kind of moderating force between these radical movements and between the power elite. We saw probably the last great gasp, with maybe the exception of the civil rights movement, of the liberal class in the 1930s with the collapse of capitalism and the rise of the New Deal. You had a progressive liberal Democrats, figures like Franklin Roosevelt or his vice president Henry Wallace, who were not tone deaf to the suffering of men and women throughout the country, who had were pushed by powerful populist and radical movements that carried out a series of sit-down strikes, the bonus marchers on Washington, this kind of stuff. And there was a perfect example of how, in an open society, the liberal class functions and is meant to function, and why it's important.
Yeah. We're talking with Chris Hedges. The book is Death of the Liberal Class. And, of course, you write in your book so much about the Espionage Act of 1917, and puts all of this in such terrific historic perspective, that there was a real concerted effort on the part of interests in Washington. I will tell you that the Woodrow Wilson in your book is very different from the Woodrow Wilson that the Woodrow Wilson boogeyman that Glenn Beck tries to convince people that Woodrow Wilson was such a boogeyman. But it sounds like the Woodrow Wilson I read about in your book, he and Glenn Beck would have gotten along quite well.
Wilson was a very dark figure in American history. Not only was he an avowed racist and anti-Semite, but he betrayed the very liberal institutions he came out of, not only to push us into war, but to create this system of mass propaganda and to break populist movements that were opening up American society to millions of Americans who had been disenfranchised. I don't know. I don't think Glenn Beck reads many books. I must confess to having never watched him, so I don't really know exactly what he says about it.
Let me ask you this. Flesh this out for us. You wrote in your book, and we're talking with Chris Hedges. We'll give away a free copy of the book in just a few minutes. You wrote that the election of Obama was one more triumph of illusion over substance. What do you mean by that?
Obama functioned for the corporate state as a brand, in the same way that people of color or HIV-positive models functioned for Calvin Klein and Benetton a few years ago in their billboards, gave their products an association with risque style and progressive politics. But like all brands, it confused people, or it led people to confuse a brand with an experience. And if you looked at Obama's 2 years of voting in the Senate, it was one corporate giveaway after another. And this has been emblematic of the Democratic Party since Bill Clinton, who realized that if he did corporate bidding, he could get corporate money. And sure enough, he rammed through NAFTA, so-called welfare reform. One of the reasons they keep extending unemployment benefits is that once they run out, you'll have to attempt to survive on $143 a month you get from welfare, courtesy of a Democratic administration. The deregulation of the banking system that caused our crisis was another gift of liberal Democrats, so-called liberal Democrats. And And Obama has continued that tradition. His 2 years in office on every substantial issue, including the most recent decision to define his campaign promise to continue the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy, has just codified the destruction of international and domestic law put in place by the Bush administration. The Democrats couldn't even get it together to restore habeas corpus. Their so-called jobs bill ends up being a $15 billion tax credit for corporations. They plunged us deeper into Afghanistan. They've not extracted us from Iraq. They've done nothing to confront the misery that has beset millions of Americans, 2.8 million driven from their homes by bank repossessions and foreclosures last year. That number will be matched this year, a kind of permanent underclass. And they've continued the looting of the U.S. Treasury by swindlers and speculators on Wall Street. It's just appalling.
We're talking with Chris Hedges. The book is Death of the Liberal Class. I've got a couple of minutes left here, but I want to ask you, it would seem as if the worst nightmares of Thomas Jefferson have been realized, and that we now live in a country was the kind of country that they revolted against in the 18th century, a corporate state that was combining business interests with government interests and taking advantage of people left and right. And so flesh that out for us, your reaction to that, and what happens next? I mean, how bad can this get?
Really bad. We've undergone a kind of coup d'etat in slow motion, a corporate coup, and they've won and we've lost. One of the fascinating developments to watch within the Tea Party is how the manipulators of the Tea Party have steered or deflected anger away from Wall Street towards government. Government has been hollowed out. Government no longer serves the interests of citizens. Indeed, when citizens express a popular desire for anything, they're ignored. I mean, the Democrats retook control of Congress in 2006 on the Iraq War, and they not only continued to fund the war, they increased the troop levels in Iraq by 30,000. The first bank bailout bill was opposed across the political spectrum. Constituent calls were 100-1 against it. And yet it passes anyway, because Goldman Sachs wants it passed. There is no way to vote anymore against the interests of Goldman Sachs. And I think that means all resistance now is local. It means that we are going to have to step outside of mainstream institutions, liberal institutions, because they don't work anymore. And if we don't, we're in big trouble, because this rage that is being channeled and used and manipulated by anti-democratic forces and movements such as the Tea Party is a legitimate rage. It should be accepted and adopted as our own. And if we don't do that, then we are going to cede ground to very dark forces that have access to tremendous amounts of corporate money that will snuff out what is left of our anemic democracy. And we saw it with the midterm elections. I mean, one of the things that perhaps is tragic, maybe tragic's not the right word, because Obama's very complicitous in serving corporate interests at our expense, is that we're now watching the corporate state discard Obama. They don't need him anymore. They've crumpled him up and thrown him away.
Chris Hedges is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and best-selling author. His new book is Death of the Liberal Class. Chris, it's been a great honor to have you back on the program. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.